Hey, guys.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
So, you know, we've been doing this podcast virtually for a while now, and it's always good to talk to you guys, but I've been watching my kids' Zoom sessions for school and after-school activities, and I gotta say, they're just more fun than what we do here, you know?
Ouch.
Wow.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I've come with a remedy. It's not just criticism here. One of the things that they do is sometimes they do show and tell, right? Everybody gets to bring something, show it off to the class. And so I was thinking that maybe we could do a little game of pandemic show and tell. You know, what's something that you have taken up as you've been working from home during these months that has become, you know, maybe really important to you, a little important to you, whatever. It's your call. Show and tell, no rules.
Yeah, I like it. I really like this idea.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so in the interest of kind of getting things going here, I will start. This is something that I didn't really want to become important to me, but in recent weeks it has. I'll just bring it up on our screen here. Describe, yes. John, what you see for the podcast audience there.
Is that a Nintendo Switch controller?
Oh, yes, it is. It is. And so I got to say, I wouldn't consider myself a gamer. I try to avoid them because I know they can kind of suck you in. And that is what has happened to me in the past few weeks. I don't know when I got into it, but I'm into it now. And I daydream about this pretend farm I have and this game called Stardew Valley and how I want to upgrade my barns and, you know, find new products for all my dairy. It is nonsense. Anyway, I've said too much.
Amazing.
I've said too much.
Sounds fun.
Okay, who wants to go next?
Well, I guess I'll go next. I'll do what Sean did and just hold up my thing, I guess. This is my thing that I have come to treasure.
Okay, I'll describe this one. Laurel appears to be holding up a toy red coffee cup. I think my daughters have some of those in their toy kitchen, yes, in the other room.
This is for my doll set. No, this is my little tiny espresso mug that I just love so much. I have a stovetop espresso maker that I have really never used until this pandemic. And I started using it because I've been missing all the coffee shops down on the square by the Capitol. And this is a little thing that I bought when I was actually on my honeymoon and dug it out of the back of the cabinet. And I've been making myself espresso like every day. Probably too much, and just treasuring my tiny, teeny, tiny little. It's just so precious. I love it.
It's very cute. Is that a pinky out kind of thing when you drink?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, John K. Wilson, you're next. What do you got?
All right. I guess I will just go ahead and show instead of tell.
Banjo. It's amazing.
Yep.
I love it.
Dusted off the old banjo from the closet. Been picking around a little bit.
Oh, man. You just won show and tell. That's awesome.
I love it.
Offense to my video game habit or Laurel's tiny toy cup there. Okay. Well, you know, that was really fun. I feel like we have upped the fun quotient here. But we got a podcast about Wisconsin politics and government news now. How are we going to do this?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear. We each just sort of go around and show and tell a story from this week's news.
Okay. So I covered a Zoom meeting of the Wisconsin Elections Commission where they talked about absentee ballots. I could bring that to the news show and tell.
Yeah, and I covered an informational hearing about some challenges in the state's unemployment insurance program and some delays in people getting their unemployment checks. I could bring that to news show and tell.
Yeah, and it's not part of my job to cover stories, but I did edit a story about the Wisconsin Supreme Court dismissing a lawsuit against local stay-at-home orders in Wisconsin, so we could all talk about that.
We all have something. Let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson.
I'm John K. Wilson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week on the podcast, some news, show and tell. All right, and that jaunty number we just heard was a John K. Wilson original, picking on the pandemic, he calls it, an instant classic that John informs me he just made up here on the spot, so we don't have to credit any formal musicians or anything like that. We credit the musician John K. Wilson. Who brought us this week's interview.
Thanks for picking up back announcing duties there, Sean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it would be really awkward to back announce yourself. So I got to do it. I'm going to hand things back over to you, though, now that we've gotten through that.
All right. Well, a show and tell of the week's news. Which of these stories do we want to show and tell about first?
So let's go with the Elections Commission, because I think it was unusual for a couple reasons, you know. One, we talk often about how the Elections Commission is split between Republicans and Democrats, 3-3, and yet they did something that many would argue is controversial. In fact, kind of going against the stated wishes, at least on Twitter, of the President of the United States. So the Elections Commission met this week. We talked a little bit about it on the show last week, what they were thinking about doing, and what they did is they voted 6-0 to send absentee ballot request forms to 2.7 million Wisconsin voters. So, again, that was three Democratic members of the committee voted with three Republican members of the committee for the same thing. And not only that, it was kind of a more inclusive mailing than we were talking about might potentially happen last week, you know. There was some talk that maybe the Republicans, Dean Knutson is the chair of the commission, that he would come up with his own proposal that would carve off people from this mailing who already have a voter ID on file, or carve off people on the mailing who come from cities that are sending their own absentee ballot request forms. And the commission did not do that. They had sort of a clean vote here to send these absentee ballot applications, request forms, however you want to refer to them, to 2.7 million registered voters in Wisconsin.
So my question is, I know we have more than 3 million registered voters in Wisconsin. Who are the people that aren't getting the mailer that are registered voters?
Very good question. So there are people who are carved off of this list. But the bulk of them are people who have already requested absentee ballots. So they already have this application on file with the state. So the state's not going to send them a piece of mail that says, hey, you can do this, when they've already done it. And then you have another group of voters who we have talked about a lot on this podcast in different contexts. And these are people that were flagged as having potentially moved. They're referred to, you'll see them in the state's literature as, quote, active movers. It's kind of funny.
Movers and shakers.
As opposed to a passive mover?
I don't know. It's just like they're always just moving around. You never catch those people.
Movers and shakers.
They're also referred to, we talk about them being on this ERIC list. What is it, Laurel? The Electronic Registration
Information Center.
It's a multi-state database based off of government records that flags people who have potentially moved. And so the state sends out mail to these people. This is a big old can of worms, right? Because there's a separate lawsuit that could remove these people from the voter list. In any case, they did not get their, they would not get this mailing under the Elections Commission's plan.
So, Sean, you were watching this meeting of the Elections Commission on Zoom, and it, you said it was sort of a surprising vote that it was 6-0. What was the conversation like about deciding to send out these mailers? What were they talking about and the reasoning behind this and such? I mean, it's because theoretically we could be having an election in a pandemic, right?
Yeah. It was funny. They didn't get this week. They didn't get terribly into the weeds of like why you would do this. The reason the staff has proposed this is that in Wisconsin, our experience in the April election informed a lot of this. We had just this huge surge of mail-in absentee voting. 62% of the people who voted in the April election voted by mail. That's unprecedented. So we don't know what's going to be happening in November, what attitudes are going to be, what the status of the pandemic is going to be. But there seems like a decent chance that people are still going to be voting by mail. And turnout for the November presidential election is much larger than turnout for the April election. It's about twice as large. So if you had a record number of people who were voting by mail in this election and it kind of overwhelmed the system, there's a decent chance that could happen again in November unless the state gets ready. And so the Elections Commission's thinking behind this is, let's be proactive here. Let's let people know about the option of absentee ballot. Let's have the message coming from the state as opposed to third party groups that could send out absentee ballot applications that are inaccurate and can either intentionally or unintentionally disenfranchise people. And so that's what they're doing. They're kind of, taking the bull by the horns a little bit as it pertains to absentee balloting.
So they voted to send out the mailer, but there is one important caveat we need to talk about. They still have yet to vote on the language of what the mailer is going to say, and that could potentially throw a wrench into the whole situation.
Yeah, that was what most of the discussion was about at this last meeting, is a couple of the Democrats on this committee, on this commission, they said, look, let's just leave it to staff to come up with the language for this letter. Let's vote on this, give them that authority, and then we're done. Okay, let's get out of here. I think potentially because they recognize the possibility that it could sink this thing when the Elections Commission meets on June 10th. If the Republican commissioners want some language on this letter that's going to go out that the Democratic commissioners are not comfortable with, or vice versa, and you get a 3-3 vote, and they can't agree on what the letter looks like, in theory, the letter might not go out. So this could have been like kind of the precursor to the real final vote. And the real final vote could end up, stuck in a 3-3 tie. So, I mean, what you're going to need to have happen at that June 10th meeting is at least four commissioners agree on what this letter should look like.
So I guess I'm just confused about what language would be controversial. Like what might either side want to include that the other wouldn't agree with?
One of the things that Republicans on the commission, especially Commissioner Bob Spindell, and also to some degree Dean Knudsen, something that they have noted is that they don't want the state really promoting mail-in balloting over other forms of voting. They are very happy with, in-person voting. Bob Spindell said that this push for mail-in voting is part of the Democratic agenda, and that Republicans are better at in-person voting on Election Day. I think there's a lot of studies nationally that show that it's like there's much more parity between, when it comes to mail-in voting, that it doesn't favor one party in the way that Spindell thinks it does. But that's definitely how he views it. And so they don't want this letter to come out and have language that kind of, it's weird. We want to inform people that that absentee voting by mail is a thing that you can do. But they don't want to encourage it in a way that maybe Democrats do. I mean, you've covered these meetings, Laurel. They can get hung up on some pretty arcane stuff, and you know, the meeting can go off the rails. One thing I'd say about the commission, you have two former clerks on this commission. This is the way that the commission is laid out in the statute. One of them is picked from a list that is supplied by Democrats. One is picked from a list that is supplied by Republicans. So they are, you know, they're Democratic and Republican commissioners, but they are slightly less partisan than the other members of the commission. And they have, you know, maybe slightly more sympathetic to the plight of clerks who had to deal with this onslaught of absentee ballots. And I got the impression that the clerks would be willing to some kind of a compromise on this stuff, maybe more than the other commissioners would. And if that's the case, they'll find a way to get four votes. But we'll find out June 10th.
So you alluded to this a few minutes ago briefly, but there's this whole other layer, too, of President Donald Trump, who's come out really, really forcefully against mail-in ballots on Twitter and other places, and has even made threats against other states that are pushing mail-in ballots to cut funding and such. But so far, we haven't seemed to have caught his notice on this one.
Yeah, you know, and if that changes today, we'll get an update from Future John maybe on that, because, you know, at any point, I feel like the president could sort of focus in on Wisconsin. Because what happened, you know, if the Elections Commission plan does go through, you know, the final letter is approved and the state sends out absentee ballot application forms, then Wisconsin has done what Michigan did that drew the president's ire and got him to threaten to withhold federal funding from Michigan. You know, Michigan didn't mail out, they didn't announce a plan to mail out ballots. They announced a plan to mail out applications. And that's what we're talking about doing in Wisconsin. And the president has been silent about that in Wisconsin. I don't know why. I don't know why. You know, it was sort of a similar thing that happened with the our stay-at-home order in Michigan's. You know, he's talking about liberate Michigan, liberate Minnesota. He didn't mention Wisconsin when that was happening either. I don't know if he just forgets about us, or if there's just, you know, a unique set of politics at play in Wisconsin that has caused him to not go after us in that way. There is one school of thought, strictly politically, that you know, if you already had cities like Milwaukee and Madison, where they're looking to mail out absentee ballot applications to their voters, then you know, it would serve Republicans well if everybody got them, to kind of level that playing field. And so, you know, that's what's poised to happen right now if it does go through.
Well, thanks for showing and telling about that story this week.
Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy to do it. And next time I'll try to learn an instrument to make the story go a little faster.
Wisconsin Elections like Commission in musical form.
I need something simple, yeah, because I got no time to practice when I'm playing video games all the time.
All right, Laurel, you want to show and tell about what you covered this week?
Yeah, so I covered this hearing this week. We're not getting a lot of legislative hearings these days, so this was kind of unique. It was a hearing by the Senate Labor Committee that got together to talk about some of the delays that a number of Wisconsinites have been facing in getting their unemployment checks during the pandemic. So we've seen a bit of a conversation about this, especially from Republican lawmakers. I'm thinking about specifically Representative John Nygren, who's, of course, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, has been tweeting about some of these delays and his concerns about how the Evers administration has been handling the unemployment office, essentially, and how, you know, it's managing this massive influx in unemployment claims. We know that Wisconsin's unemployment rate as of last month was about 14%. That's the highest it's been since the Great Depression. We know, we've done some reporting at WPR just about the volume of calls that the unemployment office is getting because of these unprecedented numbers. We got some actually detailed information. We've been getting this from the Department of Workforce Development, but we got some new numbers on Friday of last week that said during the previous week, they actually got about 3 million unique phone calls over that 1 week to the unemployment office. So we're talking about, obviously, a huge number of people that are contacting the office and needing resources like never before, or at least not for a very, very long time. So the purpose of this hearing was to kind of flesh out some of those delays, to see what's going on. The number that we're talking about here in terms of the delay is about 730,000 people, or claims rather. So 730,000 weekly claims in Wisconsin for unemployment insurance still haven't been filled. And those are claims that have been filed between March 15th and May 23rd, which represents about a third of the people. It's about 30% of the people that have filed, the total number of claims that have been filed in that period of time. And Republicans are saying that number just isn't acceptable. And the Evers administration and Democrats are saying we're essentially doing the best we can against just a surge in claims and also the systems that they're working with. And they're blaming Republicans for kind of the state of like the technological infrastructure of the unemployment system in Wisconsin. So that's kind of the whole thing in a nutshell.
So sort of the impression I got from your coverage was that both Republicans and Democrats are agreeing that this, you know, backlog is a serious issue, but are playing the blame game, essentially pointing fingers at each other. How is each side sort of saying that the other is failing on this?
So Republicans are saying that the Evers administration and the State Department of Workforce Development just haven't been doing enough to put more resources into the unemployment office. They say that they should be hiring more workers more quickly to staff up at the call center, to increase call center hours further, to make sure that they're sort of, you know, processing these calls and these claims more quickly and being more efficient. A number of the Republican senators on this committee at this hearing, Senator Steve Noss is somebody that we talk about a lot. He's been very active in budget negotiations. Senator Chris Kapinga, somebody we also talk about a lot. They both spoke at this committee and said that in their view, the unemployment office needs to be working 24/7 to be processing these claims and to make sure that there isn't this kind of gap in the number of people that have filed and the number of people that have gotten paid. They say it's just unacceptable. So the Democrats' response to that and the Evers administration's response to that is that they are hiring more people. It just takes a while to get people on board. They have set a goal of hiring 1,300 new employees or transferred employees from other state departments to handle the influx. They've brought several hundred of those already on board, and they're working to do more. They've expanded call center hours from stopping calls at 3:30 in the afternoon, which really frustrated Republicans, to accepting calls until 5 o'clock in the afternoon / early evening. I'm not sure how you classify that. And then they're also pointing out that all the timing of day is, who knows. So they're also talking about the technological side of things and some of the systems that are in place at DWD. There's a coding system that all of these programs run on called COBOL. And apparently it's quite old. It's like 50 years old. And Democrats say that the system is to blame. And actually, the department secretary, Caleb Frostman, said that the system is to blame for some of these delays because it's slower to process some things. There's some different kind of phases that it needs to run in to accept new information and then to process information. It needs kind of those things need to happen at different times of day. So they have pointed out that DWD has in the past, in 2014 actually, mentioned that they wanted to do some tech upgrades, but Republicans have never funded those. So it was a 2014 report that said that there had been some problems with, you know, getting calls and not being able to respond to them. So that's definitely part of the debate, kind of the technology behind that. And then lastly, Democrats are also bringing up the number of laws that Republicans have passed since 2011 that put some more barriers in place for claiming unemployment insurance. And Democrats are saying that those things have made it really hard for people to understand the system right now and kind of made it more complicated. I think it's important to mention that a number of the requirements that Republicans have passed have been waived right now. So the big one that we've talked about a lot is that 1 week waiting period for unemployment. That has been temporarily waived. It goes back into effect early next year. There's also the requirement that people search for jobs and provide proof that they're searching for jobs. That's not being enforced right now. But regardless, and this is something, again, that DWD said in its testimony at this hearing, is that, you know, the number of kind of intricacies in Wisconsin's unemployment law have contributed to the number of people that are reaching out and making those calls, just that those huge number of calls to the office to either ask questions or file things.
I have a couple questions for your section of the show and tell here, Laurel, and they're both kind of related. So we obviously have a different kind of benefit that people can get right now for unemployment insurance because of the federal law that was just passed, which mm-hmm. dramatically increased what people can get when they claim unemployment because of the COVID-19 crisis. What kind of role has that played in kind of, I guess, slowing things down? And how does Wisconsin compare to other states?
So in general, I think it's safe to say that Wisconsin has been slower than other states to roll out some of these things that the federal government is doing and providing. So Wisconsin was actually the last state, according to a Brookings Institution analysis, they kind of lined up all 50 states, to get that extra $600 a week in federal money added to individuals' unemployment claims. There's been some political back and forth about that, with kind of Democrats blaming Republicans for not having the special session on COVID sooner, because part of the wait for that was because of the that 1 week waiting period and needing it to be repealed. There was a requirement in the federal law that extra money couldn't be applied unless there was no 1 week waiting period for unemployment. So that's an element of that discussion. I think something that's like more concrete to understand in terms of federal resources and Wisconsin being slow to roll them out is this special unemployment fund that has been created for people who wouldn't normally qualify for traditional unemployment insurance. This is the PUA program. It's for people who are like private...
PUA.
What's
he's yeah. throwing out acronyms there.
I know. I'm sorry. I really like that acronym.
I heard that mentioned at the hearing, and I'm like, wait, hold on, PUA. Oh, hold on.
Yeah, I think there might be a pig named PUA in a Disney cartoon, and I've been meaning to Google that. I think it might be in Moana, but anyway, this is the program for. Self-employed people, private contractors who wouldn't normally be able to claim unemployment but are able to get federal government money during this time if they're not employed. Wisconsin has been slower than a number of other states to kind of set up the tech infrastructure to roll that out and make those payments. The secretary of DWD, Caleb Frostman, spoke to that and he said, you know, this was a new system that we had to build. We had to make sure it was running correctly. And so it took us a while to make sure that it was done right. So we weren't rolling this out and having problems. There was actually a month lag between when people started submitting these PUA claims in late April to when they just started being paid just about a week ago in late May. So that's about 88,000 people, I think, that have submitted those claims over that period of time that hadn't, you know, had seen a delay in getting paid. So Wisconsin wasn't alone in that. A number of other states had problems kind of setting up the tech infrastructure because this was a new thing that they were figuring out how to do and how to process. So there's been kind of delays across the board, across the country, but Wisconsin was one of the bigger delays, I think it's safe to say, just kind of based on the timelines that I've seen around the country.
And just to confirm, Pua is indeed Moana's potbelly pet pig.
Yes, I knew it.
According to this fan wiki page, it is her best friend.
Yeah, which, sure.
I don't really remember. And I've seen that movie a few times, but yeah, didn't leave an impression on me, but did on you, Laurel. Good job.
Thanks.
All right, do we want to move on to the next section of our news show and tell? The decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court to not hear a case about stay-at-home orders?
Let's do it. John, technically you brought this to show and tell. Do you want to get things started here and then we'll jump on?
Yeah, so I mean, we're getting on the lawsuit train again. This is something we've talked about a fair bit in past podcasts. But there were multiple lawsuits against Wisconsin's stay-at-home order. There was one filed by Republican state lawmakers that ended with the Wisconsin Supreme Court striking down Wisconsin's stay-at-home order. But there was this other lawsuit that was sort of on constitutional grounds saying that the stay-at-home order infringed on things like, you know, the right to gather, the right to worship, that sort of thing. And even after the Supreme Court struck down the stay-at-home order, this other lawsuit said, hey, we're still active here. We still think you should hear our case because there are these local stay-at-home orders in place now. And so, you know, it's still affecting our rights. But the court decided this week that they will not hear that, essentially saying that that second lawsuit is moot now.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a decent chance you did not hear too much about this case and it just being dismissed because, hey, there are bigger things in the news this week, as there are many weeks since this pandemic began. But for Wisconsin's political and government news specifically, this case had the potential to be significant because, you know, as you alluded to there, John, it started out as this lawsuit that went after the entire statewide order. But then it shifted its focus to these local orders that had sprung up to replace it and asked justices to hear the case. And because places like Dane County have these local restrictions that plaintiffs argued were unconstitutional. You know, this is a court that wrote like seven different opinions in the other Safer at Home decision. And so there's some strong feelings there on the court, but on this one, there was just one brief order signed by the court. So there's no dissenting opinion, right? It's you consider that a unanimous ruling, basically, where they said the case is moot. They kind of very briefly recounted everything that's happened since the lawsuit was filed. You know, they struck down the original Safer at Home order. Andrea Palm, Department of Health Services Secretary, then initiated the rulemaking process for a replacement order, then rescinded that scope statement. And these other local orders have sprung up, but many of them have been since rescinded. So they said, like, the factual circumstances have changed, and they just decided not to go there.
I think it's important to mention, though, that, like, obviously this case is gone now. It's moot. Nothing's going to happen there. But there is a pending federal case about these local stay-at-home orders. and the legal authority of cities and counties to issue this kind of order. So this issue isn't going away in a legal sense. This is something that we're going to continue to hear about, and there's still a distinct possibility that there could be a legal decision striking these down. It's just moving through the federal court, not the state court.
So just to review, I mean, what this decision means is that these local orders and counties that issue them retain that power for the time being to issue public health orders in the time of COVID-19. That has not been struck down by any court, and our state Supreme Court has not heard a challenge. Doesn't mean that they couldn't hear a challenge against that in the future, or that the federal court might not see it differently. But right now, counties can regulate this stuff. Some of them are, some of them aren't. That's where things stand.
All right. Well, I guess it's time for us to get back to video game addictions, tiny cup drinking, and banjo playing until next week when there's more news to show and tell about. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief and video game farmer.
I like that a lot, actually. I'm a good video game farmer. Laurel White is WPR's fancy espresso drinking, pinky out, Capitol reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics and banjoing nerd.
If you're looking for something cool to show and tell all your friends, as long as it's related to Wisconsin politics and government, then subscribe to get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast delivered to you almost every single week. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And of course, all of our past episodes are available anytime at WPR.org/politics.